Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Stop shuffling through life like a zombie. You're bumming everybody out. Grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through your workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max.
Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Got a hot Wednesday afternoon show for you today. One of our faves is back on the show, Mike Ritlin. Mike likes to play with dogs.
Yeah, I don't know if
mostly
I would.
With peanut butter.
Yeah, well, I think what, despite having a a notable military career and a very popular podcast, you might be most well known to the layperson as the first asshole to say Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself on national television.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Last time you were on, you were just coming off of that Fox
fucking hilarious
show. Do people still bring that up to this day?
Once in a while, you guys as a good example.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're dirtbags, so like, yeah. Obviously, we love this type of shit.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I still get the occasional tip of the cap to that shit, which is funny. But yeah, that's a weird. It was a weird couple of weeks once that happened. No doubt about it.
Yeah, for sure. Also, last time you were on the show, we talked about your extensive work with canines, in particular, security dogs for celebrities and the like all the way around. Something that is happening recently that I wanted to ask you about, because I didn't know this was a thing. Dan and I travel a lot for our shows all over the country for live shows and stuff like that. About 2 weeks ago, I was pulled out of line, and I have clear. So typically, you kind of sail through, whatever. I was pulled out of line to go and get sniffed by these dogs at the Austin airport, and I didn't really understand why. And I asked the woman ahead of me, and she said they were COVID-sniffing dogs. I don't know if that's a thing or not, but I wanted to ask you about it, and is that something that people are actively training these dogs to do?
Well, so the short answer is yes, it is a thing. My, I guess, perspective on whether or not it's that legitimate, I have my doubts. From my standpoint as a trainer, is that the difficulty lies in how you appropriate that odor, you know, and where from, and how you isolate COVID as a single, you know, odor itself, basically. I mean, pick anything else that you're training a dog to locate, is that there's a physical property behind it, with very few exceptions. I mean, there are insulin resistance dogs. That's a legitimate thing. From my perspective, there's a significant difference, without getting too, you know, dork or in the weeds on the intricacies of the olfactory sense of a dog and how right. It works. But, you know, the reality of it is that if you were to come to me and say, hey, can you do this? I would say probably not, or not well enough for me to feel comfortable putting my name and reputation on it.
Right. I wonder how, can you explain, or do you know, we don't care about getting wonky on the show. That's fine. How there are dogs who can alert their owner if the owner is about to suffer a seizure or some, like, various, is that based on the olfactory gland, like the scent, smell sense as well, or is it something else?
Yeah. So the gist with all of the type of assistance dogs is usually based off of cues. Sometimes it may be, you know, blood pressure or, or something similarly to cue the dog that's going to happen. Admittedly, you know, that's not my area of expertise. Right. So, you know, same thing with service dogs. Like, yeah, I've taught certain service behaviors, keeping kids from going into the water or assisting around the house, things of that nature. But, you know, again, because it's such a kind of a one-off in the working dog world, I've never messed with it for that reason, is that, you know, to me, there are too many challenges that exist that make it to where the reliability of that training would be in question for me to do it. So,
right.
That's why, like I said, I've just never really wanted to get involved with it, because I think there's too many variables that way. So, the short answer is I don't know that it's a legitimate fucking thing, or whether or not it's possible. I would say this is that I would love to see the dogs work. You know, whoever is training the dogs, I'd be curious to see how they're appropriating the odor by itself, whether it's, you know, using infected sweat from somebody that's COVID positive or whatever. But even with that, I think that has a shelf life. You know, insulin is insulin, right? It doesn't go bad. It doesn't, you know, replicate. It doesn't spread like it's a chemical from an odor standpoint. It has a vapor pressure like most intrinsic things value wise. And so with this, you know, it's a virus, you know, and so trying to nail down a certain level of that virus and contain it and not let it, you know, contaminate other things and keep it at whatever stage in the replication that it's at. I mean, I don't know how you would possibly accomplish that, you know? So again, just trying to teach a dog to find a certain odor, and that's all detection work is, no matter what it is. You know, it is all based on the fact that you're introducing them and exposing them to whatever that target odor is, and then you're rewarding them for finding it. The last part of that process is making sure that target odor isn't being skewed by odor contamination from other things, or being cued by the handler. And so, because COVID, you know, again, is a fucking virus, you know, to me, if somebody said, hey, I need you to try to figure out how to do this, I would say good fucking luck with that. You know, and I just don't buy it, I guess is the short way to put it. But
yeah, you're probably right about that, to be honest. I mean, how do you, there's no inconclusive when it comes to a dog. it's ones and zeros, right? It's classical conditioning, so there's a trigger and response.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, there is an art to it in terms of reading the dog, both when you're training them.
Well, I mean, from the dog's perspective, but yeah, you're right about that for sure.
Yeah, but even with that, it's there's so many variables that influence it. You know, again, one of the biggest problems a lot of handlers have is cueing their dog, is they know where the fucking target odor is during training. And so they're, you know, this dog has tons of repetitions of basically relying on the dog. You know, the military older school handlers do what we call block and tickle, which sounds way more fun than it is. But you know, the dog is on a short leash and you're basically blocking the dog and doing this with your hand, like search here, search here, search here. You know, to me, that's an odor confirmation dog, not a detection dog. To me, you should unclip the leash, stand in the doorway and tell the dog to search. And it's his job to find it if it's in there using available odor. And you do have to be heads up as a handler, you know, understanding how the way or how odor works, how it moves. And then also something as simple as, like, if you look in my background, that door seam right underneath those doors, that versus not having that is going to impact if there was an IED in the couch behind me or whatever, depending on if the air conditioning is on or other windows in the house are open. Does it have a door seam? Does it not? If it does, is it big? Is it small? You know, all of those things impact how that odor is going to move through the house. And so if you see your dog come into odor, say out by where my dining room table is, you know, he starts air scenting and then he starts, you know, moving around, he's following where that odor moves, and how that moves is going to vary based on all of those factors. That's just one part. The other part is what the handler's doing. If the handler plays a really integral role in working with that dog and the dog is constantly doing this, looking at his handler, you know, then the dog is looking for cues and they've done a bad job at removing those cues and proofing the dog off of that stuff. And then you have the target odor itself, where let's say I've been, you know, finger fucking pizza, and then I go grab TNT and I go place it, you know, here, and now the dog is pairing the grease from the cheese and pepperoni on the fucking pizza with the odor. And if I use gloves, you know, the glove odor is there. If the odor is stored in fucking Tupperware containers, it smells like that. And you've got to proof that dog off of all of those things. So detection work is a lot more complex and technical than I think a lot of people realize, because there's all of those things going on. And then you've got the environmental factors of temperature, of barometric pressure, of humidity, of, you know, all of those types of things, you know, playing a role in how the odor moves or not. Elevation plays a role. I mean, all of it. So my reason in bringing all of that up is that because all of those play a factor, you know, it's imperative that the trainer, the handler, you know, are on the same page and understand what those impacts are. Because for the dog, yes, it's all pretty black and white, unless you as the trainer and the handler have influenced that dog to where now it's not black and white because he's looking at you, or, you know, things are, the waters are muddied from a training standpoint.
Have you ever gone on a manhunt with any of your dogs, you personally, have your dogs been used on a manhunt?
I have. I had a dog that that was from the West Coast program that I was at, that I had him after I left there. And there was a woman that went missing, left a suicide note and her phone and wallet on a table not far from here. And myself and a bunch of Department of Corrections bloodhounds went out, you know, late one night looking for, you know, through the night, and ended up finding her in a pond. But, and then I, you know, I've worked with a lot of units and trained dogs for departments, or even sold dogs with training and put them through handler's course for search and rescue or for trailing, tracking, you know, so most of it is in the training, not so much in the handling, part, but I have done it before.
The reason I ask is there's some breaking news here. According to WFLA, they're reporting that partial human remains have been found in the Maitakiki, not even close on that name, Creek Environmental Park, after items belonging to Brian Laundrie were reportedly found earlier today. Yeah. This area was recently underwater. Wouldn't the dogs be able to know that was him if they did find partial human remains?
So if it's a good tracking dog, then ideally, yes. Again, there's so many variables with how the dog is trained. I'm actually supposed to go on CNN later tonight, I think, to talk about it with them, you know, on this specific story. But same thing there, you know, and the easiest way to kind of reduce it down to, for everybody to understand, is think of an ice cube, is that the environmental factors alone are akin to the way that an ice cube works, as far as, you know, the more that it melts, the more available odor is present. So if it's high altitude, really fucking cold, bone dry, there's not going to be hardly any available odor. You know, that ice cube is going to be frozen. You know, there's nothing moving off of it on the transverse. You put it in really humid, sea level, swamp-like terrain and environmental factors, and that's going to play a huge role in melting that cube and making that odor much more available. So that's number one. Number two is that, in terms of it being him or not, the one thing I will say is again, with the environmental factors, is the length of time from when he died until now is going to play a significant role in that also. You know, when flesh starts to decompose to the point where now you're more in the human remains detection dog training than you are in active scent trailing or tracking of a live person or a recently deceased person, they're going to have much more of their individual signature odor at that point than they are if they've been dead for 2 or 3 weeks. So you really would want both of them. But the articles of clothing and things like that, again, like if it's partially submerged in a swamp or it's decayed really, really bad, or animals have fucked with it, you know, there's a lot of things that can make it much more difficult for the dogs to ID it. But if it was a case where, let's say, you know, he had just died, you know, yesterday or something like that, then yeah, it's going to be much more likely for a regular tracking or trailing dog to take, you know, say an article of his clothes, dirty laundry from home, mm-hmm. present it to the dog and go through whatever cueing system that trainer and handler has developed with that dog to actively search for people and then send him on his way. And if there's available odor there, he can track or trail it and ultimately locate the person. But there's a lot of, I think, misconceptions as it relates to tracking, is that, you know, while dogs are incredibly impressive, they do have their limitations, specifically with time. Is that, you know, if it's been days or weeks, the available odor for tracking somebody is very, very limited at that point. Now, depending on what the wind is doing area searches and shit like that, it's still possible from probably 300, 400, maybe 500 yards, depending on how heavy the wind is, how humid it is, things like that. But you know, that's the thing that makes it really difficult, is that, you know, the dog is one piece of information. Mm-hmm. And like Dan said, it's more ones and zeros or more black and white to the dog, provided the training is done. I would say ideally it's that way. Mm-hmm. So much of the other half of that is being a really experienced handler that can, you know, stand, and this is whether you're, you know, an explosive detection handler in the military, where you're weaving in and out on an insert, and the dog's looking for IEDs or things of that nature, or, you know, looking for a missing person or what have you, is that, you know, a good handler with a lot of experience is going to be able to kind of look at that 30,000 foot view and say, okay, the temperature is this, the wind is doing this, the terrain is this, my dog is doing this. And you're almost like the fucking Matrix, is that your mind is kind of, with your experience and the training, is putting all of these things together and reading it as one big fucking picture that's telling you a lot of different things at once based on what the dog is doing, what he's not doing. And so it's just, you know, it does take years and years of really, really consistent and good training type of experience to be a really skilled handler, where you're actually finding people for real and not just out wandering around like an asshole.
Well, one would think that, you know, the FBI has been on this case for a while. One would think that the dogs they're using are the best of the best. However, yeah. Dan has pointed out multiple times on this show that the FBI isn't the brightest group in the whole world. So is it true that they do have the best dogs and all that other stuff, or is it just, hey?
It's kind of like with police departments. You know, a lot of people assume that cops are great shots, and some of them are. But most of them aren't. And, mm-hmm. And it's kind of that same way, is that there are certainly dogs. In fact, there's a dog that I bred and donated to a fire department individual in Kansas City that over the last few years has become one of the best search and rescue, remains detection dogs, in the country. And the FBI has used him and continues to use him a lot. for stuff like that. So there are cases where they have really good dogs. I haven't worked with any of the FBI specific guys, so I can't speak to the actual, FBI certified fucking people that that actually work for them directly. You know, I like I said, I know several of the contractor dogs that work for them, and they're pretty good. But so you know, it's hit or miss. I mean, it's kind of like a CrossFit gym. Some of them are awesome, and some of them are terrible. But
are you doing CrossFit these days?
No, I'm not. I mean, I do some of the same principle type stuff in my garage gym, but certainly, like, I'm not logging on and doing the fucking workout of the day or anything. I think some of the principles are sound, but I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid, that's for sure.
We've got a request here. I'm scrolling through the comments on YouTube. That's on CNN tonight, since you did Epstein didn't kill himself on Fox, if you can give a let's go Brandon at the end of the interview tonight.
I think if there's one way I can guarantee not being invited back on and is well worth doing, that would be it. So if I end up on there, I'm your Huckleberry. I'll fucking do it.
That'd be great, because you know the interesting part about you, and especially in a case like this, is not a lot of people have the knowledge of dogs that you do, obviously. So even though, you know, none of your principles probably align with CNN, they don't really have a choice but to reach out to a guy like you.
Well, they're probably going to regret it.
There's not a whole lot of like super liberal leaning people that are fucking military dog handlers or experiencing any of this shit. I mean, they might not be training their dogs to lick peanut butter off the bottom of their feet or something like that, but definitely not this.
Yeah. Or if they are, I mean, not any that aren't taped to a fucking tree right now, right?
Oh boy.
That thing about laundry though, I mean, if you're wondering why it's being slow rolled or anything like that, or why they haven't put out information if dogs are out there, they will probably confirm it with DNA evidence before they put the information out.
Honestly. I mean, I would hope so.
Yeah. Like, you don't want to fucking bust a nut and be wrong on that shit. Like, maybe this guy had some, who knows what could have happened, but anything could have gone wrong. And do you think it's him? I don't think it's him.
I mean, honestly, I haven't been paying close enough attention to the story to give enough of a fuck to have an opinion on it, honestly. Right. I mean, I think it's a shitty deal, but, you know, how many other fucking people go missing, you know, nationwide throughout the year? There's like fucking tens of thousands of them, you know? So
yeah.
Not that I don't feel for and empathize for the family. Cause I mean, I'm a father, I can imagine, and it's hard to imagine. I don't want to imagine being in that position, but, I also have enough of my own shit to worry about to where, you know, beyond what they or you or anybody else would ask me about search patterns or whatever, I haven't really enough thought into it to have much of an opinion.
How much have you thought about Dog the Bounty Hunter?
Yeah.
Well, him quite a bit. You know? And it's usually when I'm naked in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to, that's what peak male physical performance looks like, right?
Yeah.
Isn't he like 5'5 or some shit?
He's a small man.
Yeah, he's small. He looks, because of the hair, he looks big.
Yeah.
But that's
is he wearing Kiss boots all the time?
He might be, with the platforms. Yeah.
Yeah, he's wearing platform, a little bit of heel on there, probably a 3-inch heel.
But also the hair, I mean, that's what
another 4 inches.
Southern women have been doing that for years. Oh, yeah. Also Fletch.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's not new.
Between the heel of the boot and then the hair itself, the coif of it, that gives him 7 inches. So he's 6'2" probably. Yeah, exactly. He's probably 6'2" with the heels and the hair, 5'5" without it. So
God, that's crazy. I didn't realize he was that short.
Yeah, or that math is wrong. Yeah, 5'7".
Who knows?
Jesus Christ, Ross. But we'll be tuning in to see if you're on there tonight. Again, there's not a lot of options. So one would think you will probably make it on there.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe they're listening right now and they're like, fuck that. We're not bringing this.
I can't imagine. If CNN was listening to our show on a daily basis, they probably would have sent the police after me at this point.
Yes.
As much shit as I talk about that organization.
Yeah. Every time you come on, you're always working on something crazy. Are you writing a book right now?
So I just finished it a few months ago, and this is my first time self-publishing. The first three were all through, you know, big publishing houses. So I figured I'd take a swing at not getting 60 cents on the book, not even on the dollar.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, so yeah, in this case, they actually approached me about doing a book similar to this. Basically, it's a politics-based book where it's just kind of talking about the big picture stuff that our country is facing after having a lot of different experts on the Mic Drop show over the last few years that have kind of delved pretty far into it. I was like, well, fuck, if they've done enough research to approach me about doing it, then it must not be a bad idea from a stat or demographic standpoint. So I'll take a crack at it. So when everything kind of started shutting down last year with all the COVID stuff, that's when I was like, well, fuck it. I'm here at the house anyway. So I worked out and wrote a book, and that's really all I did during that time. And so now fast forward, it's finally kind of at that point where it's ready to be released. And I think it's a good time for it based on everything that's taken place in the last year or so. So yeah, that'll be out November 16th. And the title of that is Unfuck America.
Yes. So,
and it's actually available for pre-order on Kindle alone, because it's self-published. You can't pre-order the physical copies yet, but November 16th, is when you'll be able to order all of them. So.
Yeah, unless it's a massive advance, self-publishing, you really can't beat it. And Amazon also bought out Audible. So look, you can upload the MP3 files on your own now. Are you going to read your own audiobook as well?
I probably will. I don't have an audio version of it yet, it'll be probably next year before that actually happens, because I know that shit doesn't happen overnight either. So, but yeah, I if I do it, it'll be me reading it, and I'll probably throw some extra F-bombs and side notes in there and whatever after each chapter.
Yeah, because, I mean, with podcasts getting bigger and bigger, the biggest thing we get is hey, we want longer form content. So audiobooks destroy, especially if they're read by the author themselves. Yeah. So, I'd look into it. We got a company down here that does it pretty cheap.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a friend of ours. It's Tucker Max. You know Tucker Max, right?
Oh, shit. Well, yeah.
He did Goggin's last book, actually.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
I'd love to do it.
Yeah, we can hook you up with him after the show is over.
That'd be great.
Unfuck America is an amazing title, especially considering what we're going through. I'm sure you followed the Afghanistan shit the same way that we did here.
Yeah.
Overall, looking back at it, because, you know, we're probably, a month removed from it now at this point.
Shit, almost 2 months, I think.
2 months, Jesus Christ. Time flies when you're fighting mandates. what are your thoughts on how that was handled, and what do you think of the current administration and what's going on right now?
I mean, I don't know how it could have gone any better. I mean, they really knocked it out of the fucking park. Similarly, I think if there's one thing that almost everybody in this country can actually agree on, it's about the only fucking thing is how horribly that was handled. I'm not naive enough or what have you to say that it couldn't have been worse. We all know shit can always be worse, but it's about as bad as it could have gone, I think. Just at every level, I think, between the lead up to it, actions at the objective of actually, closing down and pulling people out, the disinformation campaign. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't true, but I mean, honestly, Jen Psaki and the entire mouthpiece for the administration at this point reminds me of Baghdad Bob.
Yeah, that's back in the day. I made the same comparison.
Oh, yeah. Well, shit, here I am stealing your thunder.
No. Everybody. I think a lot of people have, because it's so fucking stupid. Yeah, Baghdad Bob, for those who don't remember, there's American tanks. There's M1 Abrams in the background of his shot that he's doing right then, and he's saying the Americans are not in Baghdad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're right.
It's like the dude's on fucking drugs. It's like gaslighting to a degree with which, it would rival like at the height of communist Russia, and their media campaign.
Like, you've had enough food. You've had enough food. Okay. Yeah. Go home.
Or it's like, President Snow, Stanley Tucci and fucking Donald Sutherland in the Hunger Games. Yeah. And that's what it reminds me of. It's just like, either you guys are that fucking stupid, or you think we're that stupid, and they're both equally fucking dangerous and unacceptable. Mm-hmm.
I had to say about the generals and shit, not pushing back on this. Like, my point, I was in the 82nd, so my point was that any member of the 82nd Airborne that's been there for more than a few months and has learned our TTPs and shit could have planned that entire operation, to be honest. I mean, obviously they would have been out of their depth in some places, but they know the basics of how that should have gone, and they violated pretty much every fucking rule. You surrendered your air superiority first. What the fuck was that? That's the that's the one rule that everybody that's ever been in the military knows is a mistake. So,
No, I agree. And to me, the what pissed me off more than anything is the lack of communication and in the just the gross attempt at justifying why they did what they did. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've all made mistakes. Everybody does. Everybody will. You know, to me, if they had just been like, "Yeah, we totally fucked this up," you know, we're doing our best to unfuck this mess, and you know, we're going to learn from it the best we can, and you know, whatever. You know, I mean, I've said on a couple of different shows. I mean, to me, like even that statement would piss me off. It's like, "Oh, we're going to learn from it," the same way like an NFL coach or young quarterback says after an unexpected loss. It's like, dude, if after 48 years at the highest levels of the government, you don't know how to do something like this, motherfucker, you've blown your shot.
Yeah.
You know, like you're just not the right guy for the job. Not that I don't think at least half of us didn't know that or knew that, you know, going into it, but it's just, you know, when you say something like, you know, the 2 months leading up, like, "Hey, is this a concern that it's going to end up like Saigon and at the end of Vietnam?" "No, that shit ain't going to happen." And then it happens and it's like, "I thought you said it wasn't going to happen." "No, we planned for this." Like,
yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a bad episode of Cops, you know, where it's like they arrest this fucking, you know, meth head and you know, his hands behind are behind his back and they go through his pockets and they pull out like a fucking dirty spoon and a bag of black tar heroin. Like, "Well, what the fuck is
that's
this?" "Oh, those aren't my pants. I got them at Goodwill fucking two hours ago. I didn't know that shit." I mean, that's as dumb as it sounds.
Yeah.
Like they sound that pathetic trying to justify their actions. And the fact that like the entire country isn't holding them more accountable. I mean, it was somewhat refreshing to at least see a few days of even hardcore left-wing liberal media kind of taking them to task and grilling them and telling them that, you know, they fucked it up and this is terrible and it makes you look like shit. And this is a huge fumble, but that lasted for a few days. And then it was Donald Trump's fault again. And, you know, now it's back to, you know, if you don't have the vaccine, that's why it went bad. And it makes just like, you know, so
it's, it was CNN. Their point in criticizing the administration was that this is going to affect our standing in the world, and it's going to weaken your position here at home. Like, what?
Yeah.
No, the problem is that 13 U.S. service members died, that we left Americans there. There are still, to this day, Americans there, motherfucker. Yeah. That's the problem. And, I mean, whenever the first person from the administration animated that this might have been part of the plan, no. The DRF-1, the Division Ready Force 1, is part of the 18th Airborne Corps, and it's typically manned by the 82nd Airborne, and it is a single brigade that is ready to deploy anywhere in the world within 18 hours. That is not a fucking plan. That's break in case of emergency. That is the backup plan. And that's what they use to go there, and Marines from MU, right? That's those are both fucking contingencies. Those are not plans. So I don't want to hear that bullshit that this was planned. And I mean, honestly, Congress is getting... there's an investigation going on now into how all this is handled that's beginning this week. They've already subpoenaed a bunch of documents, but nothing will fucking happen.
No.
Like, there's no fucking chance.
No.
Yeah, and I echo your thoughts and sentiments on the generals. Like, I mean, to me, Milley, I mean, I'm embarrassed for that guy. Honestly, like, I'm embarrassed that he's in the position that he's at and that he's a four-star fucking general and that he's got a Ranger and Special Forces tab. Mm. Like, I look at that guy and I'm just like, how in the fuck has our military gotten to the point where that's the fucking head dude? Like, I'm blown away by it, honestly. I mean, I think that guy's a fucking traitor.
Yeah.
And I cannot fathom how our country has gotten that fucking off course to where the FBI is as partisan and incompetent as it is. And a general with that type of fucking resume has said the things and done the things that fucking guy has done is fucking heartbreaking, honestly.
But, yeah, it's super fucked up. And we're seeing some of the results. I mean, I think the reason that it happens is because you can't get promoted to general officer or get promoted as a general officer without sucking politicians' dicks. Right. Yeah. And if you don't go along, you fucking get kicked out. And that's the way it is. And now we're seeing exactly the result of that. And we're seeing the result of it in a way that's going to hit home for you and your community pretty hard, which is that a lot of special operators are telling the military to go fuck itself. I'm not injecting this shit into my body, and you can kick me out if you want to. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why the military establishment or Washington thinks that that is the group to take head on. Seriously, they don't fucking back down from fights, dude. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think it's an ego issue and a pissing contest. You know, is that? I mean, at its best, right? And I think at its worst. You know, the same thing happened in Nazi Germany, you know, prior to, you know, the Nazis completely taking over the country and what have you, is that, you know, they basically weeded out their military in a similar fashion of saying, like, if you're not okay with, you know, turning on some of your own countrymen, quote unquote, then, you know, you can bail out of the military. No big deal. Not a dishonorable type of situation. It was just like, hey, if you're not cool with it, no problem. You can pack sand and we'll just fucking, you know, leave you alone basically. And what that did was that it created an entire military of yes men that were okay with doing what that, regime wanted them to do. You know, and really this isn't really any different. Is it, like, you know, if I'm in charge of the military and I think that, you know, hey, I want my political aspirations or methodologies, ideologies to hold, I'm going to get rid of all the guys who aren't willing to do what the fuck I tell them, even if they don't want to, you know? And so you're going to be left with people that are either kicked out because they didn't go along with what you said, or they're fucking yes man and just did what they were told, even though they didn't believe in it, believed strongly against it, and didn't want to do it. To me, that's fucking scary. It should be scary for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's essentially what's happening is, as you said, we're just, it's kind of a soft litmus test, right? Like, there's no, there are consequences, I guess, now, but they're the consequences are a lot less harsh than they might be in a different situation, but essentially, they're gerrymandering the ranks of all the institutions that protect America, the military, police, healthcare workers, right? Mm-hmm, they are intentionally creating these rules. And it's not a law. It's not a law. It's a regulation from OSHA or whatever the fuck that says you have to do X, Y, and Z, and it's an executive order. It's not a law that a bunch of people voted on. It's one asshole making an edict. And, you know, I mean, if you're a commander of a military and you're primary objective is compliance from your military, that is autocratic bullshit, right?
Yeah.
The military is the subject matter expert on conducting warfare. That's their job. So you shouldn't, you can tell them who our enemy is, right? And we will decide how and when and where to fucking fight them, because that's what we do. That's what we're best at. And that's a meritocracy, the way it's supposed to work. But when the primary objective is simply compliance, that means that that person in power who's after that compliance, they're only after it for one reason, is that so they can flex that power on somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's it. Right. Yeah. And that cannot be allowed to happen.
Speaking of flexing power, the Navy said they would be throwing people out if you didn't get the vaccine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about. Navy SEALs. There's hundreds of thousands of military personnel that are still unvaccinated right now.
But the Navy itself is a branch. They're the first ones as a branch to come out and say, hey, we're going to throw you out. Will the rest of them then follow?
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, I
will say this. I mean, if there's one group of people that I could see joining fucking arms and saying, all right, collectively, fuck you, we're all out of here, then it's that group. Yeah. You know, I really can see, you know, a lot of the, at least, granted, I've been out for 12 years now, actually almost 13. I know a lot has changed in that 13 years, but I feel confident in saying that, you know, just 13 years ago when I was still on active duty, if that had come up, I think, you know, a large majority, if not almost every swinging dick in the SEAL teams, if it came to that, would say, fuck you, we're out of here then, and would have all left, you know, rather than face that, you know, that consequence. And I did see that Secretary Austin actually even mentioned something about trying to
go after the benefits, and make you pay back for your training expenses.
Yeah, forcing them to pay back for their training. I mean, it's just like,
Jesus Christ, is that real?
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Like, good luck with that, you know. Yeah. But
Mike, you got a podcast. You know, we got some sponsors who pay for the shit to be on the air. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros. 40% off that bundle package. Halloween. First, the IT guy, well, he died. And then they took it down for a few weeks, and then they're like, oh, shit, we're ghost bad. We've got a ghost in our goddamn ads. We better put the bundle package back up for Halloween. Yes, you have to. It's Halloween, dude. It's ghosts. It's what it is. Spooky. Sleep so good, it's scary. Now, the bundle package is the adjustable base and the mattress, and then you can put anything else you want with that, okay? Otherwise, you can use the promo code Drinkin' Bros at checkout and get 30% off of whatever items you want. That is the sheets, the pillows, everything. That's your call. Either way, the deals are so good, it just doesn't make sense. Dan and I have these in every single room of our house. Huge fans of ghostbed.com/drinkin'bros. As always, they get a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there. If you have decent credits, don't come at me with a 520, dog. You can bundle all of those deals together with that and then pay about 35 to 38 bucks a month for a brand new bedroom set. Look at that. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkin'bros today and hop on dem deals. Next up is Policy Genius. Policygenius.com/drinkin'bros is where you're going to get started when it comes to insurance. It's nice to get it right. This is life insurance. Look, this is something that no one ever thinks about. Full disclosure, man. When my father died years ago, that was the first thing I thought about of like, holy shit, have I done this for my kids? And the answer was no at the time. And then once I had, you know, children and everything else, I was like, this is dumb. I've got to get life insurance. If you have kids in this life or a wife that you're going to be with for a long, long time, and let's say she doesn't work or something like that, you've got to have life insurance. Go to policygenius.com/drinkin'bros to get started right now. Policy Genius is pretty much like, I would say like the Kayak of insurance deals. They'll pair up all the best ones for you and then chat with you about what you should do to make your policy better. The one disadvantage that I was under was when I first got started in it, I didn't know many people who did life insurance. So I kind of just picked like the first, you know, I think it had it narrowed down to two. And then I was just like, well, I know this other brand better. I think it might be better. And then, you know, years later when we opened up this company and had to get it for this company, I got to sit down with some real folks and talk about it. And they were like, no, you should actually get into this or whatever. And I swapped out everything. The Policy Genius just does that for you. So they're going to find the best deals and the best rates for you. And they'll hit you up and let you know and send you reminders of like, hey, dude, you should probably implement this. I can promise you this, dude. We're not guaranteed tomorrow on this earth. You don't know when we're going to get taken out. I highly, highly recommend life insurance in this life. And Policy Genius is the best in the biz for this because, look, they'll go through the process for you and do it, man, whereas nobody else is. If you just call like a singular company, they're just going to lie to you and be like, nope, nobody will beat this deal. You're fine. Everything's great. It's not true. Somebody is out there to beat this deal, and you got to make sure it's best for your family. Policy Genius will do this. Getting started is easy. First, you head over to policygenius.com/drinkin'bros. In minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need and compare personalized quotes to find your best price. When you're ready to apply, the Policy Genius team will handle the paperwork and scheduling for free. Policy Genius doesn't add on extra fees. Just head to policygenius.com/drinkin'bros to get started right now. Policy Genius. When it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it just keeps getting worse and worse. Which
I mean,
is
it depends on what you mean by getting worse. Like if you're sick, right, and your fever goes up, that is a sign that it's getting worse. But it's also a sign that the problem is being dealt with. And yeah. I feel like from the perspective of autocratic government, trying to cull or gerrymander the ranks of these organizations and institutions is them feeling like they're winning, right? They think they're going towards their goal. What they didn't plan for is us. You know what I mean? This isn't fucking China. This isn't Vietnam. This is America, bitch. And we've all got guns. There's 400 million of them here just kind of walking around on their own right now. I think that according to the liberals, they can do bad shit on their own. There's 400 million of those motherfuckers around here. And there's, I don't know, about two, 2 million people that kind of know how to handle them very well, and there's about 200,000 or so that can really handle them, right?
Yep.
Like infantry people, special operators, so on and so forth. And I mean, come on, man, what is this fucking, are these old ass bit? That's why they have to fucking kick all these people that are free thinkers out of these institutions, because they'll never go along with that bullshit, and they can't do it themselves. Like these fucking septuagenarian cunts that are in charge of our government, they're not going to go fight anybody.
Right.
They didn't do it when they were young. They sure as shit aren't going to do it now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of Saving Private Ryan. Remember that fucking spineless cunt, Opham?
Yeah, Opham. Opham.
Yeah, I mean, it's like now he's a general and he's running shit. You know? I mean,
man, nobody's fucking photoshopped Millie as Opham, have they?
Oh, that's a great call. Yeah.
God damn it.
A good
dude.
T-shirt.
Yeah, it'd be a great T-shirt. You know, with the title of your book, Unfuck America, what else has you concerned for our country as we head forward?
Fuck, how long is this show?
We have all the time in the world, my man.
I mean, to me, the single biggest point of failure, and I'm going to preface this with, I'm not a religious guy at all, is the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that, and it has nothing to do with faith, Christianity, or any type of religion. But I truly believe that that first 5, 6, 7 years of a child's life is so goddamn crucial. And if it's not done right, if they're not taught empathy and respect for things, and hard work, and morality, and certain values. How to navigate life social cue wise, and not, you know, all through text or fucking Snapchat, is that I think that's a big part of why we're at where we're at, is that you've got, you know, generation now, whatever it is, fucking G, I don't know what the fuck you even call, yeah. Okay, whatever generation is there a pronoun for it? I don't know.
Somebody actually asked in the chat what your pronoun was.
It's dude and bro. That's my name. Dude, bro.
Dude
slash bro. That's what, yeah. But you know, so to me, that's the single biggest issue, is that everything I think goes back to that, is that, you know, when you look at all of the problems, you know, they're collective groups of people causing problems. But if you isolate any of those individuals and trace it back to, how they were taught in the family, I would bet, just from the research I did extensively for the book, is that overwhelmingly is that, you know, broken homes, shitty families, ones where it's not a stable environment, where, education is a priority, and doing the right thing when nobody's looking is a priority, is all a very, very common denominator for all of those things. Now, the tricky and tough part, I think, is how do you fix that? You can't just throw money at it. People have to give enough of a fuck, you know, and so that's a tricky fucking thing to try to fix or even mitigate that from continuing to happening. But I think a lot of it starts with both politics and our education system, which that's something that we as a society can actually control. And some of the things I talk about in the book, politics as an example, you know, one of the biggest problems, I think, is the narcissism that goes along with it. I mean, I firmly believe, and I don't say this as a joke, but I think, you know, if your desire is to be in national level Congress or higher, that should automatically fucking disqualify you from doing that job.
Yep.
Because there's something fucking wrong with you, I think, to a certain extent, from a narcissism standpoint. I don't know how anybody could think, yeah, I'm going to go there and I'm going to change shit. I mean, I've seen guys that I know personally that have gone there and nothing is different. So that tells me a fair bit there, but on a larger scale, is that one of the things I learned from, you know, living in bumfuck rural Texas for a number of years before I moved into the Dallas area, was the grand jury set up in small counties in Texas. And I'm sure it's this way in other parts of the country, but the way that they did it was that they take the entire population of the county and they set it up where there's this list of boxes that needs to be checked for you to basically be a net positive non-shitbag citizen. You've paid your taxes. You've never been arrested as a felon. You've paid your property taxes. Like, you know, you have a job, you've lived there for X amount of time, just basic shit. But so let's say it's 10,000 people. They take that 10,000 people and then they have to submit a list of names. And I don't remember if it's 15 or 20 or 30 names, something like that. And then the county organizes that list of names and says, okay, here are the top 15 names that were given by this group of people. To me, that's how we should start electing our regional officials, whether it's state Congress and Senate and national Congress and Senate level people, is that you're basically voluntold, and no different than fucking jury duty is you don't get a choice. Is that there's enough decent fucking people in here that wrote your goddamn name down enough times for everybody to think you're the best guy to represent them. You're going to go fucking do it now. And I think that does two things: is it puts A, the legitimate right people in place, and B, it gets rid of all of the fucking monetary influence of, hey, we're going to donate all this fucking money, and once you get in there, you throw my brother's construction company the fucking bridge contract. All of that goes away. Or at least most of it does. I mean, I'm sure there's still going to be people that take advantage of that. But you know, is that an end all be all fix everything? No, but I think it's a real good goddamn start, to getting rid of the bullshit that exists, left and right, for the people that try to show up. The second thing is the Department of Education. You know, it started in 1979, and that's a pretty obvious shift that, you know, after a few years of our society nationally dictating and demanding that school is done this way, no matter what fucking state you're in, is that you saw a steady decline. And if you look at any graph of what our society has become education-wise, it's continued to spiral downhill since then. I think it has to go back to the states, and I think it has to get away from testing being the number one metric to determine what your funding is and whatever, because it disincentivizes teachers to do anything except teach to a certain test. I mean, there's no critical thinking. There's no fucking, government or in any real structured fucking learning as it relates to how to be a good citizen, how to take care of your body, how to balance a fucking checkbook. Yeah. You know, civics classes don't really exist anymore. All of those things need to come back. And so to me, like that's at least setting up an environment where even if you're from a broken home, like if you're at least going to school and getting good positive influences and not gender studies and fucking all this other bullshit that, that's making kids focus on shit that is counterproductive to our society and ultimately, taking it down a notch every fucking generation. That at least provides that opportunity. And then figuring out a way, to help young parents be able to provide a better environment for their kids. And I mean, I would lean on people who, are much smarter than I am for developing mechanisms to try to help that out that we haven't been using, because, again, throwing money at it, it's like throwing money to fucking Haiti. Like, the shit isn't getting to the end user. So stop fucking wasting it.
Right. What do you think is going to happen with the global economy coming up? Hollywood is usually a good precursor, just based on their storylines of what's happening. There's a lot of dystopian, poor versus rich narratives that are going on with like Squid Games and this new Dune movie and everything else. Where do you see it going over the next couple of years?
I mean, you can kind of see it unfold that way now. I mean, it's you see it just with COVID restrictions, and again, it reminds me a lot of Hunger Games I haven't seen Squid Games or Dune, but I know what you mean. And that, like, to me, that's unfolding as we sit here talking about it. I mean, when, people who are in charge, whether it's guns or masks or restrictions or whatever, private schooling, and they're all doing what the fuck they want to do while demanding and dictating to everybody else that they do something different, that is the beginning of the end of this dystopian, paralleled fucking universe that we seem to be entering into. So, something drastic needs to happen and fucking quick, or we're going to be running around like fucking Mad Max here in a couple of years.
Yeah. It's, I was talking to Alec Ross. He's an author, about it, earlier. And his big premise is that we need to rewrite the social contract between, the government, the people, and business, right? Mm-hmm. That's the social contract. You do X, I do Y, we all get along. The hallmark of a contract, however, is mutual consent. We both agree to this contract. And the operating agreement for America is the motherfucking Constitution. So if you're not using that as your baseline to conduct yourself, then you're not even in the conversation, in my opinion. And you're certainly in breach of fucking contract. And, you know, look, I said this the other day on the show. This is the foundation, right, of our home. And we are the owners of this home. This government is the foundation of our society, and we built it. And if we want to tear it the fuck down, we are well within our right to do so. That is how owning things works, motherfucker, okay? So I don't know. I really don't know what it looks like moving forward, though. Everyone's so fractured and such. I don't anticipate like a huge amount of violence necessarily. Maybe smaller pockets of violence, but more like government breaking down in places is probably what we're going to see. That's what you saw in the Soviet Union when they collapsed. It was less violent stuff and more the crony capitalists that existed inside communism started just stealing everything they could, and that's what led to the oligarchs now, right? I mean, that's kind of what it is. It's a reappropriation of wealth and power,
right?
And we'll see how it goes from there. I mean, look, the problem that Russia had was that their armed forces and intelligence services were already deeply involved in organized crime, right? And they just became the organized crime,
right?
In the country, right? And even the white collar crime. Here, though, it's not really like that. It's a bunch of fucking people that want to be left alone that have all the fucking weapons and training. Right. So it's a completely different situation, and I don't know what that looks like, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think if it did go to where it was like legitimate violence, I think that wouldn't last very long because of that. You know, is that that's going to be a pretty lopsided engagement that's going to be over almost before it started, probably. You know, because as soon as shit legitimately gets real and the people that are, you know, sitting behind their gates and fences and, you know, personal security start getting rounds going through windows and shit like that, you know, I think that they would probably change their tune real goddamn fast. You know, and I just think that similarly, like, I don't think it will come to that because I think things will just break down and people will stop giving a fuck and they'll be more focused on kind of the microcosm of their immediate scenario and environment than they will like the big picture kind of stuff. And,
right.
And it will just degrade over time into more of a second world country where, you know, shit just isn't nice almost anywhere. And, you know, and basic services are a shell of what they used to be. And there's very little national pride. And, you know, to me, I could see it going down that path, you know, relatively soon, unfortunately, if something doesn't change. I think barring, you know, a Red Dawn scenario or a 9/11 2.0, something like that, that would really kind of mobilize the entire country to unite and get behind a common enemy that's not, you know, within the United States or considering each other that enemy. Is what it would take at this point to really get off our ass and or to knock us on our ass to have to get up off of it and actually do something about it.
Yeah, and the reason I ask is, you know, coming into work today about the global economy, the stock market is at an all-time high. Crypto is at an all-time high. It just doesn't make sense for what is actually going on in the real world. There's 11 million open jobs. I was telling my wife this yesterday. On the drive home, I stopped to get gas at a Circle K off of a massive highway. Got gas. I was going to go inside and get some water. Locked, lights off, everything. And there was just a sign on the door that just said, due to us being understaffed, we physically don't have enough people to work inside of here to keep an open store. However, the gas pumps are open, but you've got to use credit cards. I just can't wrap my mind around how the stock market is still booming and crypto is still booming. And then, you know, as far as like the shortages that we're experiencing across the nation, everybody was telling hey, you got to go buy your kids toys for Christmas earlier and all that other stuff. So I went on last night and I did it. I would say about 30% of the things that I tried to order for my kids for Christmas were already gone. And we're in the middle of October, for Christ's sakes. We're not even close. So why is that? And how much longer can this last?
I think it's a few different things that contribute to that, but no different than the price of oil being having more to do with the futures assholes that make predictions and panic when certain things happen and don't even have anything to do with actual supply and demand. I think that's a lot of it. Take toilet paper at the start of the COVID fucking shutdowns. Similarly, like we weren't all of a sudden shitting our brains out and needing more toilet paper. It's that people were panicking and thinking that they needed to stockpile it, and now it's fucking gone. I think this is largely that way. I do think supply is a little lower because of the all of the chain backups at ports and all of the boats floating around. I know, you know, I'm big into cars and motorcycles and shit, and over the last 5-6 months, a lot of parts, you know, whether it's engine stuff, exhaust stuff, exterior, interior, I mean, whatever it is, mm-hmm. are much harder to get and on back order or out of stock, or, you know, we don't know when they're going to come back in. Prices have gone up a lot in a lot of ways in that industry, as well as most of them. So there is something to that. But I think that, you know, the exacerbation of that is by the media and saying shit like that, like, hey, you know, we're probably going to be out, so rush out and fucking scoop everything up now. Like, I think that's an irresponsible thing to put out there, because it just makes people fucking panic. I'm not saying hide shit from them, you know, but to have this like alarmist angle to every fucking news report. I mean, it's no different than, like, you know, stop talking about COVID deaths because the number of deaths percentage wise is down. So let's move it over to cases and talk about how high cases have gone all of a sudden, and have a ticker on the side of the fucking news channel at, you know, every news program. I think, you know, it's just, I think it's a big part of that, but, you know, I don't understand how we didn't learn our lesson, at least to a certain extent, when, the shutdowns with COVID happened, you know, last April-ish, of realizing, holy shit, like 90% of the stuff we get comes from China. We should probably do something about that. Like, it doesn't seem like we've really done anything about that. You know, manufacturing, I think, largely needs to come back to this country. And, you know, and that's something that is something that Biden could do, actually, is, you know, between tariffs and different trade policies could incentivize companies to bring manufacturing back here more than it is now. And that's something that I wish that they would do. I think that they just don't give a fuck, honestly.
Yeah, but for sure. I mean, it's about shareholder capitalism, about maximizing profits. It's not about maximizing profits in America and being responsible to the country that you're in. It's about maximizing your fucking bank account. That's the social contract. The stock market is a good tool to create wealth, and everybody is fine with that, because with investors and hedge funds and whoever else doing whatever they do to make money, because especially these days, now that with the rise of 401k and other types of investment or retirement accounts, and just people getting involved in the market, generally speaking, there's more opportunity for people to make money and benefit off the stock market than ever. But when Congress gets classified briefings and buys and sells billions of dollars worth of stocks the next day, or when Wall Street intentionally bundles these shitty subprime mortgages, sells them, and then has the audacity to short them as well on the back end so they could double down, you can stuff that shit right up your fucking ass, right?
Yeah.
We've done our part. We've worked hard for a long fucking time now. People have been working hard for a long ass time. They've been investing back into their community, buying fucking property, paying property tax on that fucking property, keeping their money inside of America, and all these other assholes haven't. Governments and businesses have failed us. And now we're seeing what a love triangle between all of us looks like, right? We're the ones that are always going to get excluded because they're after money and fucking power, and we just want to be left alone. But at some point, like you said before, people sometimes have to be forced into these scenarios to take leadership positions. What I say, my quote is, people who desire power very rarely deserve it, and those who deserve it very rarely desire it. And I think that is a fucking absolutely universal maxim, but it's about time for people to step the fuck up. And I'm not talking about running for office. There's no fucking single congressperson or senator that's going to change any of this bullshit. This is something that has to be torn down by the collective will of the people in a way that these motherfuckers can't. What are we going to do? Congress is the one that has to change this shit. Based on current U.S. law, Congress has to go change this shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They have to go vote against their own interest, against the people that are funding their campaigns. It's not going to happen.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's like asking the fox to audit himself going into the hen house. Yeah. Like, that shit's not going to, oh, I found myself not guilty. No shit. Didn't see that one coming. Yeah, I mean, it's that way with any internal AG investigation that the government does on itself and finds itself not at fault. It's like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Like, of course you didn't, you know? It's just, you know, to me, it's such a slap in the face that, you know, one, that again, that they think that nobody's paying attention. But two, is that not enough people are, You know, and it's, I think kind of to your point is that, and what we've been talking about is, you know, there has to come a certain point where it's not an inconvenience anymore, you know, and that's unfortunately, you know, up until now, I mean, now when people are legitimately losing their jobs and can't get basic necessities and things like that, I think you may see the tide start to shift. But up until now, like, it's just easier to be like, nah, fuck it. You know, it's kind of like a shitty marriage. Like, it's not a catastrophe. It's not an abortion of a marriage, but it's damn sure not what you want either. Mm-hmm. Like, it's easier to just stay married and be like, nah, it's not that bad. You know, it's kind of that same thing, I think, with a lot of people is that it's like, nah, it's a mask. Nah, it's a fucking shot. Nah, you know, I got to wait in line for this or whatever. But they need something that's not going to just be kind of a naggy inconvenience. They need something that's going to kick them square in the fucking nuts or lady balls and really get their attention and make them actually change their behavior. I mean, it's the same shit with dog training. Mm. Like, if you're giving a dog a correction for something and it's just kind of nagging them, they're going to fight through it and keep going. What, like, you've got to do it significantly enough for it to stop or cease the undesired behavior. And until you do that, it's just going to keep happening.
Yeah. And I think lastly on this.
So you're saying we need to put a fucking e-collar on everybody in Congress, basically.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Around their fucking sack.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think lastly on this like economic conversation, like it's also about educating yourself. And I don't think people go out of their way to do the homework to really see if there is what the price difference is by ordering American versus Chinese or overseas or whatever. We literally just went through this with the seltzer. One of our tankers got stuck over in Europe, right? And the first question I asked was, all right, great. Can we get this in America? And the company that we were dealing with at the time was like, well, you know, we get a better discount or whatever. They got a discount for them as a whole, not for the individual companies and everything else. Once we did our homework on our own, not only did we find out that it was just about the same price as going overseas, but it was all in America and you could hire more people and more workers and keep everybody working and keep a constant chain and flow going. I just don't think people want to put the homework in and do the job and say, all right, great. What would happen if I move most of my business to America? Is there another company out there that can print t-shirts or something else that we can get off the fucking China tit? I just don't think a lot of people want to do it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. As you were saying that, there's another aspect to it that I see a huge paradigm shift. You guys, you know, grew up in the 80s, basically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Late 90s, whatever. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I mean, so, you think about the difference in, like, national pride back then versus now. Like, it's a polar opposite. You know, two things that China and Russia are still real fucking stout on is that. You know, you know, that's one thing that, and I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know why there's been such a paradigm shift from then to now in terms of pop culture and what's, you know, a common theme for most people to think about. But I do think that plays a role because, like, if you're not proud of your shit, you know, where you're from, your country, your state, your town, whatever, you're going to be far less likely to fight for it, to defend it, to give enough of a shit to maintain that. And that I don't have an answer for. I mean, it seems like it started in the 90s with political correctness and things of that nature, where we started feeling guilty about everything and now hate ourselves, like the self-deprecation that takes place in this country, especially among white men, is fucking sickening.
Yeah, it's weird.
But I do think that plays a big role because, again, if you don't care, you're not going to fucking maintain something.
Well, I think it's that we don't make anything anymore. And then that's not an appeal necessarily to American manufacturing, although there are certainly economic benefits to that. There are also security benefits to that, by the way, where you don't have to rely on countries that may become enemies or may have ulterior motives to get shit we need to protect ourselves.
We're
that
shipping.
Might be a good idea.
Yeah, shipping.
Yeah, or anything. But it's the IKEA effect. America doesn't make anything anymore. We just consume. And if you only consume things, then you feel like a consumer. You don't feel like it. If somebody is, here's the perfect example, a fucking mechanic. The car they drive around day to day might look like a piece of shit, but if they're a good mechanic, every piece of work they send out of their shop is immaculate, right? Mm-hmm. Because they take pride in that shit. That is their ownership because that's what they're doing. They just bought this other thing. This is what they're creating. You know what I mean? And it is the IKEA effect. If you give somebody something 80% assembled and they assemble it the rest of the way, they feel ownership in the product. Now, during the election run-up last year, Trump said that one of his new goals was to try to get Apple to start building their shit here.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be about a probably 25% increase in goods if the materials were sourced here. If the materials are sourced somewhere else but assembled here, 5%. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to pay 5% more so people can fucking have jobs, frankly. And if you're not and you're in a position to do that and you feel like you shouldn't have to pay 5% more, then fuck you. You're not a goddamn American, in my opinion.
I also think if companies came out and told you that to your face, right, at these fucking Apple events, if what's his dick, Tim Cook, came out on stage and said, look, we're moving everything here. It's going to cost 5% extra, but we're not on fucking China's dick anymore. Are you guys cool with it? I think if just one huge company like that was just honest with their consumers, everybody would be on board. Like you were saying, I would pay that extra 5%.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I absolutely would. I mean, and especially, you know, not just the principle of that, but the, from kind of a national security standpoint is that, you know, I mean, I know there's plenty of Android users, but fuck, they're all made in China too. I mean, the entire U.S. military, they all have cell phones that are made in China. You know, our government, same thing. So there's that aspect of it, as well as just the, you know, hey, all of a sudden your shipping lane shut down, or China decides, you know, we're not sending you anything. Now you're not shit out of luck with no fucking products for any aspect of your life either.
Right.
Which I think is very undervalued and needs to have a higher level of importance placed on it.
Yeah. If you want to talk about the trickle down economic effect, this is what it really looks like. That whole shit about that Reagan talked about people in the lower class doing better because people in the upper class are doing better. Well, we can now see from 25 years of math that that's just not true, right? Mm-hmm. But what does happen is if you start fucking with industries that depend on that shit, the truck industry, for example, in America, they can't get the computer chips they need because they're over there. And now you can't find a fucking truck. So we're going to have to bail these assholes out again or what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We just create more and more problems for ourselves. And we think there's not going to be some kind of downstream effect, but that's the American fucking politic machine now. We mortgage the future for a little bit of current progress or comfort. That's all we've done. We're not willing to make any fucking sacrifices anymore.
I think we need to go back to the steam engine. To trains.
I like that.
Shout out to Robert Fulton.
I like that one where the two guys have to do whatever the fuck that is. I don't know what it is.
The jerk me off train?
Yeah.
Jerk me off train.
Yeah.
Mike,
yes.
This is the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
I got to go with my dad. You know, he really fucking set the tone and the standard and was who I emulated growing up and really looked up to and wanted to be like, you know, and what's interesting is that, you know, he started it and laid the foundation. That's why I'm pretty adamant about being able to try to replicate that as much as possible for as many young kids as possible. But then also, you know, the second half of coming into adulthood is, you know, all the SEAL team brothers that I had kind of finished that growing up process. But, you know, I would not have been able to join and ultimately be where I am today if it wasn't for my old man. So shout out to George.
Awesome. Shout out to George. And look, you're one of those guys we could talk to for hours and hours. However, we're a massive fan of your podcast, Mic Drop, and our own D'Anthony Holloway will be on there. So we won't take away all the topics for that. Because I believe, what are you guys recording on Friday?
Yeah, we're going to get weird.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome.
Really might wear one
like Austin weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to, I don't even know what Austin weird is anymore, to be honest.
I don't think Austin knows. I mean, defund the police and fucking let the floodgates open.
Yeah.
Is that weird?
They have no idea, dude. They have no fucking idea.
I mean, for me, that's just like stateside kill opportunities on the rise. So I'm fine.
Yeah.
Right. But I do. I worry for others. Yes.
I wouldn't live there. I will tell you that.
Well, we do on the outskirts.
I don't know
at least.
I
love this. Look, I love the city. I love the food. It's beautiful here. The politics, I that's the only thing I just don't like, but whatever. I have to see beyond it.
I don't have a problem telling people openly to go fuck themselves and doing exactly what they're telling me not to do, right? In their proximity. Mm-hmm. But it's not about the battle between us. I just don't care what they're saying. So I kind of enjoy that. You know what I mean?
And most people here aren't confrontational. So
they're pussies.
They'll say things probably like 10, 10 minutes after you leave. So I don't
mean, most
really
of them are Californian at this point.
Right? Yeah. Give it 10 years. Yeah. It'll be the whole fucking state.
I know a bunch of motherfuckers from California that have moved there in the last 2 years.
Oh yeah.
A bunch of them.
Yeah.
I think Jocko's just waiting for all those people to move and then he's going to take over California just by himself.
That'd be some shit.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here, man. Your podcast is one of our favorites. Check out Mic Drop if you have not, and look for his new book. It is available for pre-order on Kindle right now. Mike Ritland, thanks for being here.
It's an honor and a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on and anytime. So let's go, Brandon. Huh?
Yes, tonight. Check out CNN. Tonight. If he gets on, let's go, Brandon. For
Danthony, it's coming.
I hope so. God damn it, I hope so. We'll play it on all of our socials. For Danthony, yeah. Danthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.
Love Madison Volleyball is back, bringing the tough and gritty play Wisconsin is known for. Featuring world-class athletes, including Wisconsin favorite Lauren Carlini. Get ready for fast digs, huge swings, and long rallies. This is volleyball built for Wisconsin fans. And this season, there are even more home matches to get behind. Tickets available now. Visit lovbmad.com/iHeart. Love Madison's new season begins January 2026.